Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The director and artistic director of the Milwaukee Repertory Theater, Mark Clemens, has said that John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men was the first piece of literature that profoundly affected him as a young man. It presents themes of isolation, segregation, and pain. I think many of us read Of Mice and Men when we were in high school, if not in college. It is a work that is widely read, not only in America, but in other countries as well. Even though it was written in 1937 and actually has been a fairly controversial piece of work, it was banned in many schools and libraries for vulgarity and what some consider offensive and racist language. We'll talk about that during the course of this hour. It appears on the American Library Association's most challenged books of the 21st century. It is really a very, very moving production that the Milwaukee Repertory Theater is giving us until February 21st, I believe, and we have two of the main characters with us this hour to talk about Steinbeck and to talk about the characters that they play. Scott Greer is playing Lenny, and Scott is making his Milwaukee Rep debut. We always love to talk to people who are here for the first time so he can tell us what he thinks about the city. He's a 20-year veteran of Philadelphia theater. He's done performances in many other cities as well. He has won 5 Barrymore Awards for Excellence in Theater, was named 2014's Best Theater Talent by Philadelphia Magazine, and was Barrymore Award nominated for his performance as Lenny in Philadelphia, which Mark Clemens also directed some years ago. So he is resurrecting the role for us in Milwaukee, and it's quite an interpretation of it. Thank you so much, Scott, for being with us.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, it was an extraordinary performance. Very, very moving. Jonathan Wainwright is also with us for 4 seasons now. He was Bob Cratchit in A Christmas Carol, widely viewed show that the Milwaukee Rep has given us for many years now. He has performed in Othello and Translation. Last year, he worked opposite his wife, Laura Gray, in the Milwaukee Chamber Theater's The Good Father. He's played Shakespeare in various locations in the state, and he plays George, the friend of Lenny. The two of them are the stars, really, of the show. And Jonathan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. It was it's a hard play to watch, but the two of you together are really quite extraordinary. So many people have written that this novella and play is about friendship in a very deep way. Do you think it is the friendship between the two of you on stage?
Between us as actors, you mean?
No, that as characters.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely about that bond. I mean, it's friendship. It's also sort of parent-child. It's, you know, caretaker-ward kind of. Yes, it is. It's definitely a play about friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the parent-child thing is interesting because at a certain point, though, you find out that that parent needs that child, you know, so much more than maybe he even knew he did, as far as what he was going to try and accomplish in his future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what purpose is there to it at a certain level, and it leaves it out there a little bit. But yeah, it can be hard.
Yeah, what is it about this play? I mean, 1937 is a long time ago, and there may be some parallels in terms of struggling, how hard it is to make a living. This is a pretty dramatic case of how hard it was in 1937 for migrant workers to make a living. But what is it? Is it friendship? Is it an American dream? Is it trying to make it when times are hard that keeps, is it the words that keeps this alive for so many generations?
I think it's all of the above, really. I think there is that idea of modest and attainable dreams, you know, a place of your own, a little bit of security and stability, and the idea that, you know, a tiny event is not going to put you out on the street and that you have, you know, yeah, sort of hope for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Is very common and still, you know, rings very true today. I think also all of the stuff about race and segregation and all of that still, I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, you can pick up any newspaper and point to 3 or 4 themes in the play that are still prevalent, I think.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan?
Search for connections. And again, the word hope, comes in, you know, the hope for these connections and what they can mean to you. When we first show up, you know, at this ranch, there's an attempt to make as little connection as possible right off the bat. But very quickly, connections are made, whether they're positive or negative. You know, these connections are made and they spur things along in a very sort of day-in-the-life way, but an extraordinary day-in-the-life. And how those things can happen at any time. Mm-hmm. And they can be profound in what they imply for, you know, people's futures. And, you know, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. You mentioned the issue of race. One of the characters in the play has to live in a place apart from all of you because you may not be doing very well, but he's really at the bottom of the heap. He's got to live in segregation. And there is, maybe it's one of the reasons that this has been a controversial work. I'm just interested in you when you have to say the N-word on stage, which Steinbeck did use and created some controversy over this novella, later play adapted. What do you think of that? Is it a worthwhile conversation to have? Is it a controversy? Or is it, you know, the words that he used and they're important to the context of the play?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think my daughter is going to come and see it. She's 12. And I'm going to have a frank conversation about that, you know, the scene specifically where it's used a lot. And that Steinbeck was capturing his day. He would not have bothered to investigate the life of Crooks and give him as full attention character-wise if he was a segregationist, if he believed in segregation, you know. So I think that it's in an historical context that these men who are protagonists that you are invested in casually use the N-word because it was 1937, and that was the way things were.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have the term African-American, and they were. He was very separate. And Steinbeck makes a lot of, you know, he makes that very clear. But again, he wouldn't have given Crooks the humanity if he believed that that was not a problem. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting because the scene in which, you know, that word is used prevalently, it's used in a rapid-fire sort of succession.
Yeah.
Right away. You know, and that can't be by mistake. He pummels the audience with it very quickly.
Right
you
up
know?
Front, too.
And a lot of it is coming from a character who's the oldest character on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
So he just, yeah. He gets it out of the way. And it's very interesting because one of our previews, right there in the front row, because you talk about kids and you also talk about racial controversy, there were two African-American children, very young, like very young, sitting there, front row, with, you know, their father or, you know, a relation of some sort, some guardian who was watching them. But I'm sitting in a place on one of those bunk beds, and they are very much in my line of sight, as much as, you know, you're an actor and things are blurred for you, but they're right there, you know, they're 2 feet from the stage. And I couldn't help but have it cross my mind, what is this doing right now? How are they dealing with this? But the end of that show, you know, you could look over at them during the curtain calls and they were right there. They were very much, they did not seem ever shocked or squeamish in their chairs or, you know, anything like that. They were very much into the story. I mean, other actors, you know, noticed them mostly because they were very young. But yeah, it's just such a human, relatable story that on some level, none of these characters is approaching things on that level because everybody is trying so hard to survive.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely that separation there, and that's definitely a negative. But then there's this sort of everyday thing about it. Now, luckily, Crooks is there to sort of break that and go, this isn't everyday, this is terrible, you know. But it's just interesting how it's all just out there. This is who we are, this is who we were, this is, you know.
Yeah. Do you immerse yourself in the time period at all? Were you studying migrants in California? Do you read books about that? Did you see the 1939 four-time Oscar-nominated film Of Mice and Men, or do you ignore all of that and just delve into a character analysis and work just from a script?
Well, I, you know, Lenny is a unique
guy. Lenny's a very unique character.
Yeah, I mean, both cases, I mean, I did the play in Philadelphia, and in this production there was a ton of dramaturgical work available to us in terms of images and accounts of migrant workers' lives in the 30s, and I avail myself of that, but it and I did see the film. But he, you know, like I say, like Lenny is in a unique, you know, he's not, he doesn't have to sort of speak with authority about, you know, bucking grain bags and agriculture and that kind of stuff, you
right.
know. So my research was a little different than that.
Yeah, I would imagine it was. So were you doing research on people who have big hearts but aren't very smart?
I did. I watched very helpful to me was a wonderful documentary called How's Your News, which is about a camp, summer camp in Massachusetts for adults with various, disabilities. And they have a traveling interview show where they do these man on the streets interviews, and it's amazing just watching how people react to them, but also their kind of, you know, their questions. And I mean that was really a very valuable asset to me.
Mm. And is it unusual as an actor, because you're not using as many words, you don't have to, it's a character where you're becoming childlike in many ways, so is it a more physical performance for you?
It is.
Using everything.
I was 9 years younger when I did this part before, and my knees have, I think I'm a more experienced and better actor than I was 9 years ago. My knees and elbows are not. So yeah, I'm padded up like a gladiator under my costume. In terms of the physical stuff, there's a lot of behavior and stuff that I think is in the the constant need to touch something soft is a very common with a number of different disabilities. I read a lot about a thing called Fragile X syndrome. And that perseverative speech, where the repetition of certain words and phrases over and over again, and the hand flapping, they call it, but also that sort of auto stimulation of needing, you know, something in your hands, which I think both kind of are, you know, I'm not saying that Steinbeck intended that this guy have a specific kind of mental retardation, but it sort of was a place to start from for me, and so. I mean, I did, you know, like I say, watch videos and read about, you know, that kind of disability.
Yeah. And a different kind of preparation for you, Jonathan?
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes, I loved all the dramaturgical information that was available to us. It's an interesting thing. Once I had, you know, I hadn't seen the film, I couldn't recall probably a lot of the book if you asked me about certain characters in the play, you know. I would recall the main characters, but not, you know, I'd recall George and Lenny and that general situation, but I wouldn't recall everybody else. I sort of lost my train of thought there.
Getting prepared, did you look at, when you say,
right.
The information you had, what was it?
Well, see, all the images. Mostly the images are what's interesting to me. The idea, you know, you can see the threshing machines and things like that and just what it must be like, you know, out there, very hot, very dry.
Right.
The whole Dust Bowl situation happening. So, you know, that extending, I'm sure, into California, although I'm more familiar with it in that Oklahoma sense, I guess. Mm-hmm. But just hard. Just things hard. Talking about bucking grain bags, I don't necessarily need to know exactly how much those things were. I can imagine you're taking something extremely heavy and you're twisting your body to throw it up onto something else, you know, onto a truck, wagon, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, trying to build a patio in my backyard, I know that just picking up, you know, big paver squares and moving them all day on a summer day is hard enough. And I can go in my house and drink all the water I want and make a smoothie and, you know, watch TV.
Yeah.
Not doing it to survive. So just that constant notion of, I think that's why in the first scene it's so interesting that George just needs to just take a minute to not go there yet. Mm-hmm. We're not going yet. You know, just, I had dinner. I'm fine.
You had some beans.
I'm not going to die. I'll probably get in some trouble, but whatever, I'll deal with it. I need this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
I need this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how if you have to get up early the next day for work, how you would think, oh, I need to go to bed. Well, no, sometimes it works the opposite way. You need to just sit there and decompress a long time, even though you know you're going to have to get up and you're going to be tired.
Right.
And then preparing for George, so much of it is about connecting with Lenny, connecting with that friend, connecting with something, someone, an idea, a hope. The fact that Lenny has this crazy hope because of something I said once or whatever, that he needs to hear things again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And George, no, I don't want to tell you that again, but he does.
Right.
He does. He wants to say it over and over, and the more he says it over and over, which could probably piss him off sometimes, is that the more you say things over and over, the more that dream becomes possibly attainable.
Mm-hmm.
And then every time you have little things come into view that make it more attainable, and then if it happens, that's wonderful, and if it doesn't, my goodness, it can be crushing the closer it gets, right? So it's just about that.
Yeah.
So my research, you know, in a lame sense, was not much. And like, once I have the role of George, now I'm not going to go watch the movie, you know. Now I really don't want to read the book. Now I want to deal with what's in front of me, the people who are there, the surroundings, the set, the sound, what I'm wearing.
Right.
This guy sitting next to me,
right.
You know. So.
Yeah. So let's talk about the dream for a while and where they are the same and where they diverge and where they're the same now as they were in 37. Mm. What's Lenny's dream?
Lenny's dream is to be allowed to take care of rabbits. And it's interesting. I think, you know, time is a different concept to Lenny, and the future and like something concrete, and like it, you know, it's almost like just hearing about it is enough for Lenny in some ways, because it isn't sort, I don't know that he can kind of go, well, we've been doing this for 8 months, and if we you know what I mean, I don't think his concept of time is linear that way. So he's a much more in the moment kind of creature, and I think when they're talking about it, it's almost as if it's true. So in some ways he has his dream as long as he has George.
That's interesting.
But I, you know, because he doesn't ever talk about being bummed out about working hard or the traveling. They, you know, Steinbeck doesn't remember much, you know, his memory is selective and isn't able to put stuff, events and stuff together the same way we do. So I think, yeah, I mean, he's, as long as he's got George, I think he's basically happy, you know?
Mm-hmm. And George as well? Is he happy as long as he has Lenny? Or
well, that's the thing. More? You know, he just said that, and I was thinking to myself, "Oh, that's George too," because George's dream is wrapped up in trying to make the dream happen for Lenny and for himself. I mean, when George talks about what his life would be if he was on his own, it's not about that. It's the hope and the place, you know, the place of their own, our own. Mm-hmm. It's not a place of my own. It's a place of our own. And without Lenny, it's that hope is diminished greatly, if not completely extinguished. You know, I mean, that's how I treat it. Mm-hmm. As George, mm-hmm. because it is such an odd thing. That's I listened to the amazingly wonderful Cheeky Johnson, who plays Crooks. He also does the rep in depth discussions before the show, and I can hear him over the monitor while I'm in the dressing room, and it's taught me a lot, you know, about the story. I mean, he's become a wonderful dramaturgical source as we've opened the show. And the stuff he talks about, the oddity of two people traveling together, because you have to then have a symbiotic relationship. There's no way that two people were going to survive if it's all up to one person. Mm-hmm. Mm. I don't think there's any way. George gets, as our director talks about, like George gets jobs because of Lenny, because of his connection to what Lenny can do out there. And Lenny gets jobs because George can take care of things and talk.
Right.
But their being together makes them outsiders. Every character in the place.
Absolutely.
What do you mean you travel together?
Yes, they all
what
say
do you
that,
mean,
don't they?
You know, and either it ranges from suspicion to that he's exploiting me, or, you know, there's mm-hmm. some kind of homosexual relationship,
right.
or there's, I mean, like, no one get their head around, he just care about each other and he looks out for me and mm-hmm. you know, like, that is in that world just unheard of. Hmm. You know, which I think is significant. But I also just want to talk about dreams a little bit. I think,
can you hold on 1 second?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll get back to dreams and
great.
More talk about dreams in just a moment. We're talking with two of the actors, the stars really of Mice and Men, which is at the Milwaukee Rep right now. Scott Greer, who plays Lenny, is making his Milwaukee Rep debut. Jonathan Wainwright, who plays George, they're with us in our studios here in Milwaukee. The play just opened over the weekend, so I don't know how many of you have had a chance to see it, but I know many more of you have had a chance to read the play or the novella by John Steinbeck, and we are welcome your thoughts about the relevance of what was going on in 37 to what's going on now. This has been required reading for generations of high school students in this country. Is it something you would still put on the must-read list? And if so, why? The director of the play has said that this was the first piece of literature that affected him, and profoundly so, as a young man, with all the themes of isolation and pain and segregation, a testament, he says, to friendship and to the enduring human spirit and to hope. So where do you place it in American literature? Should everybody read it? And maybe a few of you have seen the Rep's show, too. I hope so. And then you can call in. So here's how you call in. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And before we go to phone calls, our number, by the way, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Scott, you were going to talk more about the American Dream.
Well, just that, yeah, I mean, I think you can't talk about Steinbeck and not talk about his belief in the labor movement and, you know, in 1937, I don't know exactly when, but, you know, like Social Security was a new program and all of this. I mean, this idea of just a little bit of security, right? Your own place, a job that you don't, that you feel secure in, and that, you know, they're not going to can you, as George says, that they're not just going to throw you out, and that you have a little something that's yours. And I think that's very clear priority for Steinbeck to mm-hmm. get that across, mm-hmm. you know.
Let's go to some phone calls. Steve is calling in from Delavan. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I saw the play, and I liked it very much. I've seen it a number of times, and I particularly like what Scott did with the character of Lenny. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. So oftentimes I think he's played more childlike, and he almost blunders into the incidents that caused the trouble. And I think in this case, you see him, he's childlike, but he's an adult. He's a man. He's a grown-up, and he has all the anger and all the that an adult would have. And I thought he did a really good job of portraying that underlying anger and dangerousness. And I thought it gave the character a lot of depth, and I really liked it very much. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Steve. I really appreciate that.
And, Steve, when you say you've read it a lot or you've seen it a lot, why? Why is it an important piece of literature to you?
For me, the theme you talk about of two people relating to each other and having somebody is just, for me, it's a very profound theme. And I look at those two. They're so different. And so often in life, you made up or you meet up or you will pair up with somebody who's quite different than you, but there is something there that makes the two of you stick together and gives you both value. And I think it's something we need to look at. I guess when I see some people pair up and they, well, I want somebody who's just like me, or I want a person who's this or that or whatever, I think you can miss what you can see in a person who's maybe quite different than you, but that there's something there that you latch up with.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much, Steve, for the call. Well,
thanks for taking my call.
I would imagine there's a danger. I haven't seen... I think this is a first stage production I've seen it. I've read it, but I hadn't seen it on stage. There probably is a danger of, particularly with the Lenny role, but of a sort of characterization that may be too simplistic in doing this role, right? It needs to be more nuanced than that, and that must be hard in some ways.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't think Steinbeck was writing specifically about a guy who has a specific disability. I think you could call what I'm doing a sort of modern interpretation with the full knowledge of, you know, mental disability. You know, I mean, I don't know how much research and stuff was done
when
he wrote it. But I do think that these, you know, that Steve is, I'm very happy, picked up on. I was interested, as was Mark, in exploring an adult with a child, with a child's, you know, mechanism for control. So he has, you know, he's been through puberty. He feels rage and fear and panic the way a child would, but he's 6 feet, 280 pounds. So, that's problematic. And I think that's in line with what Steinbeck was talking about, that he panics when the, and he crushes, you know, I don't want to give too much away if people haven't, you know, but he hurts another person.
Right.
But I think it isn't an accident. I think he tries very hard to avoid it. But, you know, he lashes out. He gets hit in the face repeatedly. Any human being who's ever hit in the face knows what that feels like. And you have a tremendous fight or flight response to that. It's just a physiological thing. So he is, you know, he's going to stop it. He talks about, you know, he brings up the idea that a cat might eat these theoretical rabbits that we're raising, and he has a violent reaction to it. He says twice he would smash the cat's flat with a stick. Mm. So I think all of that's in there. I babysat when I was 11 for a neighbor who had a kid with Down syndrome, and he was 16 or 17. So he was through puberty and well-developed muscles and was stronger than me. The sweetest kid, a really great kid, but I remember he was swinging a tennis racket around the house, and I was nervous that he was going to break stuff. So I was like, hey, you know, can you not do that? Let's not do that. And trying to take it away from him, and he did not want to let it go and got, you know, and he kind of, you know, stopped smiling and was looking at me with anger and made it, he was much stronger than I was. Mm-hmm. And he relented eventually, but I had a moment of like, oh my God, he could really hurt me right now if he wanted to. Mm-hmm. And he, I think looking into his eyes, he looked to be making the same calculation. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
That's so, yeah, so I don't know. I thought it was, I mean, I that's what I was interested in exploring with Lenny.
Yeah.
That yes, he is a default, a really sweet, you know, joyful, happy person in general. But he also has a child's mechanism for controlling overwhelming emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? And does George fear that at all, do you think?
Not at this point in their relationship. There might have been a point. They've known each other for a very long time. They went to grammar school together.
Mm-hmm.
I think George's parenting skills are just by default survival. He knows how to deal with Lenny just as Lenny, not as anybody else, not as any other child or any other person thing. He probably learned what he knows, as I like to think, from Lenny's aunt. You know, mm-hmm. that's sort of the backstory there of just how to deal with Lenny. But, yeah, they grew up together as children. I think there were times when they fought, like kids fight. I think over time, you know, not to give too much away, but, you know, George makes it clear to another character that there's times when, you know, I feel fine slapping him around because I know he won't. He sees me as somebody who, you know, takes care of him, keeps him alive, saves him in situations that he can't control, that he gets into. So I think sees me as the person who gets him out of those. Or
yeah, he's the one person that won't, that Lenny won't lash out at, I think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, he talks about having hit me with a fence picket and that kind of stuff. That and, you know, one of the other characters asks, you know, would he ever, and he won't. And I think that's true.
I do think it's true. It's interesting to think sometimes, you know, the sort of what ifs of stories. Well, what if this doesn't happen in the play? And what if this doesn't happen in the play? And the relationship continues over time, you know. Would there ever be a time when that,
yeah,
when that finally just wasn't true?
Mm-hmm.
But then you've also got to think that George isn't an idiot, and that at a certain point he has seen what Lenny can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I would guess there's certainly a fear back there somewhere of, if I take this too far, I really can't do anything about it either.
Well, he certainly warns people about Lenny, doesn't he?
He certainly warns people, but as often is the case in this, you know, relationship, George is much better at do as I say, not as I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, George makes his mistakes in regards to Lenny and others. So,
yeah,
you know.
Let's read, because I wasn't aware of where the name of this play came from, and it's got kind of an interesting history, and I thought I would ask the two of you to read us the poem. I guess Steinbeck had a different name for this play, this novella originally, and then chose Of Mice and Men. This Happened, I think, was the name of it, something like that.
Happened.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Something that happened.
Happened.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Right. I've forgotten that.
But instead, he was inspired by a poet.
Yeah, Robert Burns. You'll forgive us for not trying to assail this in the original Scottish dialect.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll read it.
We'll read the translation.
Okay.
And I guess we'll just trade stanzas, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I will admit right off the bat that this is another thing that I have learned from G.K. Johnson's rep in-depth discussions. I did not know that this came from a poem. Did you originally?
I did.
Okay.
You well, seen the play before, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly. I didn't read the poem. I just knew that it came from.
Oh, you didn't. You haven't read it. You haven't seen this before.
No.
Well,
you
all
do.
Right,
you've
gentlemen.
Got it. Yeah,
this
you've
is
got
the definition of
read.
On the spot.
Yeah, it's a cold.
Yeah.
Read.
So, Do you want me to go first?
I'll do the Scottish, and you do the no.
No. No.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Okay, we'll trade stanzas.
Sure.
Small, crafty, cowering, timorous little beast, oh, what a panic is in your little heart. You need not start away so hasty with your hurrying scamper. I would be loath to run and chase you with murdering plow staff.
I'm truly sorry man's dominion has broken nature's social union, and justifies that ill opinion which makes thee startle at me, thy poor earth-born companion and fellow mortal?
I doubt not sometimes, but you may steal. What then, poor little beast, you must live. An odd ear in 24 sheaves is a small request. I will get a blessing with what is left and never miss it.
Your small house, too, in ruin. Its feeble walls the winds are scattering, and nothing now to build a new one. Of coarse grass green, and bleak December's winds coming, both bitter and piercing.
You saw the fields laid bare and wasted, and weary winter coming fast, and cozy here beneath the blast you thought to dwell, till crash, the cruel plow passed out throughout your cell.
That small bit heap of leaves and stubble has cost you many a weary nibble. Now you are turned out, for all your trouble, without house or holding, to endure the winter's sleety dribble and hoarfrost cold.
But, little mouse, you are not alone in proving foresight may be vain. The best-laid schemes of mice and men go often askew and leave us nothing but grief and pain for promised joy.
Still you are blessed compared with me. The present only touches you. But, oh, I backward cast my eye on prospects dreary, and forward, though I cannot see, I guess and fear.
Mm. And thus of mice and men.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Very nice.
That's
nicely
a cool
done.
Poem.
It is a cool poem, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
Let's go to Mike in Milwaukee next. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi, Mike.
Yes, I don't know. I don't think it's been mentioned. There was an interesting version of the story that in a movie, I think this probably came out in about the early 90s, with the two main characters played by Malkovich and Gary Sinise. I was lucky enough to see it on 36 just a few years ago.
I've seen it too. It's very good. I liked it a lot.
Did you like? Have you seen the Milwaukee production, Mike?
Oh, no.
No. So did you like what you saw?
No, well, I didn't see the play. I know I'd seen the movie, and I can't even recall if I ever read the original novel.
I'm sorry, so this is a second movie? I'm not familiar with this.
Yeah.
I don't know how many movies there
like
were,
92.
But there was one the character portrayed by Malkovich and Gary Sinise,
I see.
Which was based on a very famous production they did at Steppenwolf Theater in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, it's, I thought the movie was quite interesting and tragic, dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's about it.
Okay, Mike. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks,
I hope
Mike.
You enjoy the Milwaukee production. Is there a lot of variation in how this has been performed? Is there a great difference between the Lenny that you did in Philadelphia, what you're doing now, what was done in 37, 92?
Well, I don't. I've never seen a stage production. I've only seen the film.
Uh-huh.
In neither of the films that I've seen, neither Malkovich nor, is it Lon Chaney? I can't remember.
Yeah, Lon Chaney.
Lon Chaney. Really attempted any of, they were very different.
Mm-hmm.
But very effective, I thought, and particularly Malkovich, I liked what he did.
There is an element in this play. We don't want people to think it's all about the American dream and how hard life was in 1937. There's
right.
a great deal of tragedy in this play. That you're sort of on the edge of your seat. And you're saying, "Please, please, don't let it be so that this is really happening." It's kind of. It's almost shocking. I mean, you see what's going to happen early on, but you still can't believe that it's, and we can't even say what it is, or we'll give
right.
it away if you haven't read it. But
right.
a lot of people are familiar with mm-hmm. Of Mice and Men, and it's,
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. It is.
Yeah. Do you think that it stretches our minds at all for that to happen? That our perception of who this man is, that part that you talked about, Scott, when you talked about the rage within him, too, we can accept that about this guy? It's an added layer to his character, certainly.
Except what? About who?
About Lenny.
Oh, except the rage?
Yeah, the fact that he's capable of what happens later in the play.
Oh, sure, sure. I think Steinbeck, there's so much foreshadowing of things. Small events foreshadow slightly bigger events, which those foreshadow bigger events. It's a succession of tragedy put upon various forms of life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That has profound effects on the lives of everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Decisions are made that people have to make all the time.
Mm-hmm.
People have to make them in different ways now. And there's all kinds of controversy over those types of decisions without, you know, I don't want to give anything away either, but
yeah.
If you see the play, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Or if you've read the book, you'll know what I mean. So it's forever and always these decisions and the effects.
Yeah.
No, and Steinbeck's great artistry is that even though, as you say, you see what's coming, he sweeps you up and you get caught up in the sort of their hope and their,
yes,
and there's like, you know, there's that sense of like, well, maybe it'll work out, you know.
Right.
And there's
right.
also tremendous, I mean, like, he, I also don't want people to think like it's this sort of Bataan death march of a play. It's there's a lot of humor in it and tremendous sort of humanity, and there's plenty of,
yes,
moments of lightness as well, but it does. Yeah, I mean, that's what's so great. I mean, that you, no matter how many times you've seen it, it's impossible not to get convinced that maybe it'll
You're
end
right.
differently.
You You're know? Absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do have that sense. And is there anything that what could have changed in all of their lives so that they could have achieved some of that to
right.
avert the ending? Do you think about that on stage?
Oh gosh,
at all?
It's such an if only, right?
Right, like, it is really.
I don't think about it on stage. I mean, that's sort of not my job to do that. I think I hope the audience does. I think they do. I think, but that's more Steinbeck's job than mine. But, you know, yeah.
I think about it as it's happening, you know. One minute I'm thinking about it a certain way, the dream. I let myself very much think about it in a completely different way at another point in the play.
Mm.
And I'm personally capable of those shifts myself, from this is entirely possible to this is not possible, why even bother, to oh my gosh, this is possible and
damn yeah, it. Right.
You know, so sorry if I said something wrong.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, so it's like that for me, and even my very last thoughts are still, yeah, the what ifs.
Mm-hmm.
There's still the what ifs, you know, and what am I going to do now?
Right.
Always.
What is
What's
going
the
to
next
do now?
Thing now?
Mm-hmm.
Because always there's still survival.
Right.
So unless you're not planning on surviving, you're still making decisions.
Yeah.
So.
More phone calls in a moment. Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking about Of Mice and Men. The Milwaukee Rep currently has it in on the Quadracci Powerhouse stage until 21st, is that right? 21st of February?
Yeah,
is that
correct.
In my mind right?
Yes.
And we're speaking with Jonathan Wainwright, who plays George in the production, and Scott Greer, who plays Lenny. And here's how you reach us. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. We're on Facebook as well, and that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm sure many of you, you're a sophisticated group, have read Of Mice and Men, or you're familiar with Steinbeck's work. So I'm just asking the question. Nobody so far has wanted to respond, but do you think it's important for certain works of American literature to be seen by everybody? You know, that it's sort of a must-read when you're at some point in your education, and if so, why? If not, why not? We'll take more of your phone calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls for our guests, and Mel in Madison is next. Hi, Mel.
Hi.
Hi.
Kathleen, I just wanted to say hello to the actors. I worked for the Madison Rep in Madison for 13 years, and we did Of Mice and Men quite a few years ago. The Rep's now gone. But I wanted to applaud them for their presentation on the air, and especially for reading from Robbie Burns, because I think it makes it clear that... for people who don't know, that John Steinbeck was nothing if not a writer of social conscience. Mm-hmm. And we live in a world where currently there are more displaced people, refugees and immigrants, than at any other time in history. And I think the play is about looking out for those who need looking out for, no matter what they're like, and taking care of them. And I think it makes it a very important play. I applaud the Rep for doing it, and I'll ask you, too, to say hello to Judy Burdan if she is still there for me. I used to work with her.
Yeah, Judy isn't working at the Rep. I haven't seen Judy. I mean, she pops in every now and then, right? No, I remember Judy, but I'm not sure what she's up to right these days.
When he sees her, he'll say hello.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Is it a big thing now for a repertory theater to perform this play? Is it something that used to be in standard rotation and it's not as done anymore, or do you know?
I don't know. I know the Rep did it 16 years ago. I would imagine it's something that comes around.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when I did it in 2007 at the Walnut Street in Philadelphia, and nobody had done it. That's not true. Delaware Theater Company had done it a year or two before that.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't know. I don't think it's in heavy rotation. I mean, it is, you know, an iconic American work of theater and literature, and so there's... You know, there's always demand for it when theaters do it.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree with his description of Steinbeck as a writer with a deep social conscious?
That was right on. I think really well said by Mel. That was a really incisive.
Yeah, I like it too. Thanks, Mel. Hallie in Milwaukee. Hi, Hallie.
Hi. You haven't commented on the fact that the show was done on Broadway with James Earl Jones in the season of 74 and 75.
Oh, that's right. Oh, and actually 2 years ago with James Franco and Chris O'Dowd.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's true.
Okay,
Did you see any of those, Hallie?
Yes, I saw the one 40 years ago.
Did you really?
So James Earl Jones was Lenny?
I'm sorry?
James Earl Jones played Lenny?
Yes.
Oh, boy, I bet that was great.
And Kevin Conway was the other role.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. That's awesome.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, certainly. I enjoyed it. We used to go and get our fill of theater. We saw 11 shows on that trip.
Wow.
Fantastic.
So I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's great. That's a way to go to New York to see all those shows. Will you watch these after, or do you think you might be doing this show again? So once your performance is over, will you, Jonathan, watch some of these performances by others? You will.
Yeah, I think I'll definitely check out the year was it, the oldest one?
39
years.
Talking about. Yes. Sorry. I'll definitely read the book.
Okay.
And I probably will read more Steinbeck and check out other things by him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a notoriously bad theater historian, so anybody out there, don't be surprised if I haven't heard of something that took place, because, I'm very bad at that. But I definitely want to check out some of that, because now it would be more interesting to me to see what other people do.
Yeah, I'm sure. Thank you both so much for being with us and for your performances. They're very, very good, and it's an important play. I'm glad the Rep is doing it.
I think so.
I do, too. Thank you both.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jonathan Wainwright, who plays George in Of Mice and Men, and Scott Greer, who plays Lenny. The show is at the Milwaukee Repertory Theater in downtown Milwaukee, and it runs through February 21st, so you have time to see it. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the show, and to KP as well for on-air production, and thanks to Scotty Myers for his help, and thanks to you for listening. News is coming up from National Public Radio. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 1 o'clock.